quickly. And I'm glad to say that that's my hunch. I hope I am right. I hope I am right. Because now I'm going to speak in terms of a metaphor. And that leads to allegory, because allegory is a metaphor. Both of these are Greek words, too. God, we can't escape that language. But an allegory is a metaphor stretched into an entire story. All right? Now, I am speaking metaphorically, but I think my message will be plain. If I catch anybody writing on or carving colorful language, using the most polite phrase I can think of, into a place where it's visible and will have the effect of embarrassing or humiliating anybody else, I will break your hand. I will grind your bones to powder, and I will use that powder to fertilize my vegetable garden in the spring. I will be as vicious as I can be in response to that, because I don't tolerate dirt and humiliation. Do you understand? This is a personal grudge on my part. Believe you me, I can be extremely Spartan about it. In fact, the temptation to exercise vigilante justice, entirely independent of the lawful authorities in the upper school office, is very, very strong. Okay? So, you've got any hoodlum friends who thinks it's fun to carve language or write language on surfaces where it's visible to other folk and humiliates them, tell them I said that. You understand? Because I will hunt you down and I will grind you into dust. I don't tolerate that sort of stuff. All right, now the bad stuff is over. Now, my assumption, of course, is that you're innocent of that mess. That none of you were involved. It's innocent until proven guilty. Okay? So as far as I know, all of you guys are blameless. And unless I have reason to change my mind about it, I'm regarding you that way. Okay? All right, let's go to Mr. Plato and see what he has to say about the cave. I need somebody, first of all. We're going to do first the story and what happens. We're going to do the plot and the characters. And then we're going to go into the meeting. Right? It's just like English class this way. But it really has to do with history, as we'll see. Forgive me for finishing up this advisee bagel. It's too good to miss, and I'm too hungry. I'm hungrier than I have ever been since I was 19 this year or so. If you want to know why, I can explain, but my appetite has grown enormously. Anyway, somebody care to tell me the story? So the story happens in what kind of location? It happens in a what?
Cave.
All right, so what's this cave like? Who's in there?
Prisoners.
All right, how do you know they're prisoners?
Because they're chained up.
All right. So they're chained to the floor. What else do we know about the setting?
The light comes from behind them and they can only see shadows.
All right. So the only source of light is from behind them, right? And they're positioned in such a way that all I can do is see the wall of the cave and the shadows on the wall. Is that the idea? All right. So that sounds like the setting. You've got a bunch of guys chained to the floor, can move only a limited way, and the only thing they know of their world is what they see, these shadows dancing on the wall of the cave. Is that pretty much it? All right. Now what happens? What happens next?
Then one guy goes up to the light.
How? Let's do it step by step.
Well, he turns around and he sees the light at the entrance of the cave.
Okay, now we're going to take this minute step by minute step, because all those minute steps mean something. It's going to sound like a lot of quibbling to you, all right? Already, you're leaping to his emergence from the cave. But there's some stuff that happens going out and going back that we have to pay attention to as well. All right. So I'm hearing so far that somehow he works free of the chains, right? So he can turn around. He can see the actual light source behind him, right? When he sees that light source, how does he react?
Blind.
He's blinded. So it's not altogether pleasant, right? All right. Where do we go from there? Now what happens?
He exits the cave.
Not right away. He's just been blinded. Can he exit the cave and can't see where he's going?
He accustomed to the light.
Nor notices. He has to get used to the light. Right?
Now,
once he gets used to the light, excuse me, lesson on not talking and eating at the same time. Once he gets used to the light, he starts looking around the cave, right? Seeing what it looks like, right? Now, what is his range of vision compared to the other guys now? All right? What happens next? What does he begin to do? What does he begin to notice about the floor of the cave? Is it flat or is it on a slope?
Slope.
All right. He notices that eventually the floor slopes upward. What does he do then?
He climbs up.
Climbs up, right. And eventually as he climbs up, what does he see?
The sun.
Not yet. Before he sees sun, what's he going to see? He's in a tunnel. What is he going to see at the end of it?
Light.
Daylight, right? Is it direct sunlight?
Yeah.
No. Now, I'm quibbling about this because this is stage by stage by stage by stage. And all these stages symbolize something, all right? Once he sees that daylight at the end of the tunnel, how does he react? Is it comfortable for him?
No.
No. Once again, what does he have to do?
Get accustomed.
He has to go grow accustomed to it. All right? Now, finally steps out into the doorway of the cave, right? And what does he see that he's never seen before?
Sun.
Not yet.
Color.
Good. What else did he see that he's never seen before? He's just come out of a cave. Imagine you coming out of your house. You open the door and you go out of your house and is the sun the only thing you see? And do you even see the sun right away? What else do you see? Name everything you can imagine you might see going out of the door of your house. What?
Ground,
the sky, what else?
Plants.
Plants, what else? If he looks long enough. Rocks, what else?
Animals. People,
animal.
Buildings.
All right. So what's happened now to the range and variety of what he sees and what he experiences?
Expanding.
It's expanding. All right. Now he's still in the doorway of the cave. Does he see direct sunlight yet?
No.
No. Does that only when he does what?
Steps out of the cave.
Steps out of the cave, does a little traveling, right? And gets out into that direct sunlight. And now what's happened to the range of his experience and his knowledge?
Expanded.
Usually expanded, right? Okay. Now, at that point, what does he decide to do? He's in broad daylight. What does he decide to do? He's been exploring for a while, discovering stuff. Now what is he doing?
Turn around and go back.
Turns around and goes back. Why does he decide to turn around and go back into the cave?
Tell other people what he saw.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, is his return into the cave, don't worry about the end result yet. Is the journey back going to be any easier than the journey out?
No.
Why not, Stephen?
He has to readapt.
This time, instead of to light, to what?
Darkness.
To darkness. Okay? All right. So he takes that rough journey and he goes back and he finally sees his friends, right? And what does he do then upon seeing the other people in the cave? We're still chained. Pardon?
He doesn't.
Oh, yes, he does. Yeah. He feels a duty to do what?
Show the light.
Yeah. Tell him what he saw. All right. So he tells him all this stuff that he's seen. Right? Now, why does he feel a duty to do that? What does he think he's doing? God bless you. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he just keep all this discovery to himself? What does he want to do?
Expand their knowledge.
Why does he want to expand their knowledge? Give me a motive. Why does he want to do that?
People thank him for it.
I'm sorry?
They can't do it themselves.
Well, they can't because they're still in chains, right? So, what's he trying to do?
Get them out of the chains.
All right. So he's trying to help them, right? Okay, so he tells them all this stuff. How do they react?
They think he's insane.
Yeah. They think he's completely crazy. What do? Come to the end of the story now. What do to him? Do they simply say, you're freaking crazy, or do they take some sort of action?
Chain him back up.
Let's get rougher than that.
Kill him.
They kill him.
How can they kill him when they're in chains?
I know. It isn't.
Yeah, then they're all.
Yeah, you know, but you're being very, very practical, legitimately so. But understand the whole thing is a metaphor, and what Plato is doing is bending the practical realities. Let's assume there's enough slack in the chains where even if they can't turn their heads. If he gets close enough to them, they can wrap a length of chain around his neck and they can strangle him. All right? Because I think that's basically the scenario, although it's not plain from the text of the story. Good question, though. Okay? So they kill him. What's the moral of the story? Why do they kill him? What's the moral of the story?
People are afraid of what they don't understand.
Yes, people are afraid of what they don't understand, and when they go frightened, what do?
Kill things.
They get vicious. All right. That's one moral. Okay. Any other lessons from this story? This is where we get into what stands for what, by the way. Where was Plato from? Specifically. Where was he from?
Immigrated.
Where did he live? No, he's not an immigrant. Where did he live? Where did he set up his school?
Athens.
Okay.
Was this after the death of Socrates?
Now you're getting somewhere. Yeah, this was written in the early 400s, 4th century BC, early 300s BC, after the death of Socrates, after the Peloponnesian War.
So Socrates be compared to the guy killed because he
knew. Bingo. There it is. So what's the cave represent?
Greece. Athens.
Athens. Okay. What does the darkness represent?
Ignorance.
That's right. What does the light represent?
Truth.
Truth and knowledge. Who's the guy who burst his chains?
Socrates.
Who was Socrates' favorite student?
Plato.
You know what an elegy is? A written tribute to the dead? Do we have an elegy here? Okay. Elegy. E-L-E-G-Y. Like Plato's funeral, Pericles' funeral oration, that was an elegy to the war dead at the start of the Peloponnesian War. Okay. Now, if that's true, what do the chains represent? What?
Government restricting people from.
Okay. Could it also be people's own habits? Remember, do these guys, when they hear Socrates' story, break their chains or do they keep their chains? Why do they keep their chains? Why do they break up?
Because they don't understand.
Yeah, you're on to something. Go ahead.
Because they don't want to break the rules.
Okay, why else?
Because they know it. They're afraid of what they don't know and they know what the chains are.
There you are. Excellent. Excellent. Now you're getting somewhere. Yeah. What are the shadows dancing on the wall? represent?
Material things.
Yeah, and what they know, all right? All right? What does the light burning behind them represent? If, pardon?
No.
Their range. Yeah, so what is their range of knowledge like and wisdom and access to the truth like compared to this guy who broke his chains?
Minimal.
Exactly. Perfect. Perfect word choice. All right, so who do the other guys represent? Who are they?
Athenians.
The Athenians. Okay. Look at the question on the board. Do you see a connection? These are the Athenians. These are Athenian men. These are Athenian citizens. What is Plato saying? This comes from a book called The Republic. The subject matter is government. What is he saying? Because the story goes on beyond the murder. Yes?
Democracy is going to fall apart.
Yeah. Democracy doesn't work. Does he suggest an alternative?
The one with an oligarchy?
Tell me. Don't ask. Tell. Does he suggest an alternative? And if you don't know by looking in my direction, why don't you have to pick up the text and look near the end? You'll find it. What does he suggest? First of all,
you mean philosophers as rulers?
What was that?
You mean philosophers as rulers?
Okay, there you are. Why would he say that? Yeah, that's true. There may be some self-interest there. Why else?
They bring knowledge.
Pardon?
They bring knowledge.
They bring knowledge. Now, what's he suggesting about the general state of awareness that most people have?
Very poor.
Yeah. Ordinary people, therefore, fit to run a country?
No.
If they're not? Wow. What does this mean for democracy? Yeah. Where does it go? Does it go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Away, right? Boom. End of discussion. All right. Now, notice what Ashley said. Philosophers as rulers, right? How many rulers? How many? Give me a number.
One.
Oh! And instead of philosophers as rulers, it becomes what? What kind of government are we implying?
Monarchy.
Bingo. It's the most famous philosopher in Greece talking. Which way is Greece going to go? What would you predict?
Monarchy.
You got it. All right, now watch the relay. Because we're going to take the bridge into the next part of Greek history here. Socrates taught whom?
Plato.
Excellent. Plato taught whom?
Aristotle.
Excellent. Okay. Was Aristotle a native Athenian?
No.
Where was he from? What area? what's going to happen next, and where is it coming from?
Macedonia.
Bingo. He's a Macedonian immigrant. Who, incidentally, will be called back to Macedonia for the best job he ever had. Who was Aristotle's most famous student?
Alexander Great.
Bingo. Whose father hired whom to teach him? Who's Philip?
Alexander's
dad. He wants Alexander to be superbly educated so that Alexander can impress everybody in what country?
Greece.
That's right. So who's he going to hire to do that? Come on, you got it, guys. All the clues are up there.
Aristotle.
Now you're cooking. Because if Alexander can wow all of Greece, what can he and his dad do? You got it. Time for some overheads. Don't need this one yet. We're going to start with the Peloponnesian War situation. See where Macedonia is? Alright, that's the lineup as of 431 BC. You want to see where it is almost 70 years later? We're going to go from 431 to 362. Okay? I want you to notice something. And I want you to pay particular attention to what single place? We've already mentioned it. All agree? Say it again. Bingo. Here's Macedonia right here, right? 431. 362. Notice anything? It's expanding.
Doubled.
Yeah, it's double the size. Now, the Indies were, by most Greek standards, primitive people who wore sheepskins, running up and down hills, and could barely fend off the Thracians to the north and east. Thrace is where modern Bulgaria is now. Okay? Get the idea? But, as you pointed out quite correctly, Macedonia is growing. Philip will take over the country in 356. What do you think is going to continue happening?
Expansion.
Further expansion. Exactly. Excellent. All right, we can turn this off now. Until finally, by 338, what will Philip have accomplished?
Ruling most of Greece.
If not?
All of Greece.
Greek unity under Macedonian rule. All right? Now, the question we have to figure out is how the Macedonians pull this off. Is it entirely by their own invention, or do they borrow ideas from other city-states? And we'll see what you can see. Did you notice that Macedonia's got a coastline? That could figure into it. Okay? And think of ideas that Macedonians, who were relatively primitive, can combine to make themselves the strongest force in all Greece. By the way, have you ever heard of a guy named Demosthenes? He was a speaker from Athens. And you ought to read, I gave you one of his speeches. It's called a Philippic. All right, these were Demosthenes' speeches in Athens. Denouncing Philip, saying Macedonians are no good, they're out to conquer all Greece, Athens will lose its freedom. We better get organized. We better get an alliance up among the other city-states, or what's going to happen to our city-state freedom?
Lost.
We'll lose it to this ambitious, power-hungry god. Okay? Who is not necessarily too appealing a character. By the way, both Philip and Alexander were alcoholics. Gifted. But they had their weaknesses. Okay? But Demosthenes had a problem too. He had a speech defect. He kind of This is how he cured it. He went out to the beach, put a stone under, a little pebble under his tongue, learned how to place his tongue, spoke over the sound of the waves of the beach, and became, some believe, the greatest public speaker ever in the history of the world. And he started out with a speech defect. He came close, but the Macedonians won. Not only that, by the time the kid was barely older than you, starting when he was 15 or 16, guess who was commanding armies?
He was.
Who's he?
Alexander.
Working as a general for his dad. Incidentally, Philip had 7 wives. Alexander was the son of his 5th wife. Was it entirely obvious that he would become the next ruler of Macedonia?
No.
No, it wasn't. There was a little intrigue. You know how Philip met his end? He was assassinated in 336. The palace rumor was that Alexander's mother was involved in the plot, and possibly Alexander himself. Never proven. Here's a king who had 7 wives, all of whom wanted their children to be the next ruler. Can you see where there'd be a little intrigue? Why do you think Philip chose Alexander to educate before all his other children? No. What do you think? What do you think Philip was looking for in the next ruler? Talent. Okay. Okay, so here we are. How did the Macedonians pull this off? Entirely their own ideas, or ideas they pulled from the other city-states and blended together? Are you saying pulling and blending? Okay. Now, if you had to pick any Greek city-states from which the Macedonians could borrow and combine ideas to their benefit, which city-states would you identify?
Athens, Sparta.
The usual suspects, right? Okay. There you go. All right, now, tell me what we take from Sparta and tell me what we take from Athens.
The war.
Military of Sparta.
Okay. Okay. What would we take from Athens? Remember what I said about Macedonian geography. As Macedonia expands, it has more and more access to what?
The sea.
Okay, so what else?
The Navy. Philosophy.
All right. Now, is it simply a matter of being strong and smart, or is it also a matter of being elegant? These Macedonians are backwards compared to the rest of the Greeks. Do you think they have something they have to prove? Other Greeks think they're crude. Why do you think Philip hires Aristotle to educate Alexander?
Because they want to prove they're not.
All right, so there's any other stuff that we're going to borrow from Athens besides philosophy in order to prove that we're elegant too? Aristotle wrote a book about ethics. That's what it's called, ethics. He wrote a book about God or government. It's called Politics. Okay? You see what he wrote about He wrote about science. He wrote about all sorts of things. You see what we're talking about? What other things could Athens lend Macedonia that would make the Macedonians have style? Bingo. Keep going. Keep going, come on, you're warm.
Smart.
Yeah. We are fit to rule Greece because we can prove that we are what? Sorry? We're all of that. Not only how much, but also how what? Is it simply quantity?
Quality.
All right? We're as much and we're as good as whom put together?
Athens and Sparta together.
Bingo. And once we do that, this was Philip's next project when he got knocked off. Once we do that,
Persia,
we can go after Persia. Why would we go after Persia?
Because they can.
Pardon? That's one reason, because they can.
They come. They have a lot of land. Oh,
okay. You take over Persia. In effect, what have you taken over as far as Greek knowledge is concerned?
The world.
Most of the world. So does Greek culture stay local?
Yeah.
Oh, what does it become if we do this?
Worldwide.
Ah. Okay. From local to global, right? That sounds pretty big. Why else do we want to go after the Persians? Look back. Look back in time. What have the Persians been to the Greeks?
Church.
Yeah, constant nuisance, right? What's it time to do?
Pay
them back. Pay them back. They manipulated all of Greece during the Peloponnesian War, right? They played Sparta against Athens. They made Greece a target. They're a constant menace. Try to eliminate them. Not only that, this also has something to do with culture, folks. And this is really important. This is really important. Guess what Aristotle taught Alexander about Greek culture compared to everyone else's?
It was superior.
It was superior. Now understand this notion. This is planted in Alexander's head. All right? For the first time in the history of the world, who's saying they're better than whom? All apologies to people celebrating New Year's today. Give me the whole idea.
Europe is superior to Asia.
Yeah, not Europe can match Asia. That's Persian wars. This is different. Europe is, complete the sentence, better. This has never happened before. This has never happened before. Okay? The question is, what will Alexander discover once he... goes into Asia, because in terms of length of time, who's got the older civilizations?
Asia.
Asia does. Where did civilization start?
Asia.
Asia, not Europe. Oh, it looks like these Macedonians and Greeks have something to prove. And is Alexander going to prove the point? Up to where we could say it's great. And if he does he do it without undergoing some changes? Do you understand? Because when you read that mutiny speech, all right, the troops are mutinying not only because they're tired, but because by the end of his conquest, Alexander orders his officers to marry Persian princesses. What's the cultural message there?
We win.
Not only we win, but there's also something else. There's another cultural message there. Why And a lot of his generals were saying, what do you mean marry these alien Persians? We're Greek. We should marry Greeks. Why do you want us matching up with these Persian women? What's the other cultural message there, folks?
They're almost equal.
Persia has something to offer, too. Asia has something to offer, too. Okay? Now, what was the attitude of Alexander's invading army going in? Whose culture was better?
Theirs.
Whoa! Do we have some issues to straighten out? All right. Thank you. Now, before you go. All right, you worked hard today. This was not easy stuff. You had to wrestle with a few things. Remind me, please, when we meet again on Monday, what is the central question? All right, we'll show you some overhead maps of what he did by way of warming you up, and then I'm going to open it up for your answers and your reasons. All coming up next time. Have a great weekend. Take care. It's both.
Well, I have two different paragraphs. I have one paragraph on the Middle East and one on Africa.
Here's what you could say. You could say ancient Egypt is a blend. It's Middle Eastern because it's African because. All right? Because that's where the evidence actually points.
Huh?
That's one of the things that makes Egypt so interesting. You can't do that. Okay?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Howdy.
Hello.